Here we go. Welcome to the Transform with Travel podcast, where we share stories of personal transformation and life lessons through our experiences of traveling and exploring the world. Travel is the ultimate accelerator for personal growth, and it can be the root catalyst for the pivots and plot twists we make in our lives. I'm your host, Kelly Tolliday, and it's my mission to inspire you to live life to its fullest, travel with an open mind and heart, and let the world show you a new perspective. I'm so grateful you're here with us today, so let's dive right in. Happy exploring. Welcome to the Transform with Travel podcast. I am sitting here with Madison Bailey Mengame, and Madison and I have known each other our entire lives. Yeah. We've gone to the same elementary school. We went all the way through the same high school. We worked together in the same office. And now it's just been so amazing to see you grow and your family grow and all the amazing things that you've done in your life. So thank you so much for joining.
Thank you.
And so for those listening, Madison has been a huge traveler her entire life. And you have done sustainability work all over the world. It's something that I remember at a very early age being like, wow, this is really cool. I didn't even know that was an option to grow up and have those programs available to you and do what you've done. So Madison has done sustainability work in the DR with Seven Elements, and you've studied abroad in Seville, Spain, while providing health education to teens with the Red Cross. And while getting her master's from the University of Notre Dame, she implemented a mosquito prevention program in the Amazon jungle of Peru. Definitely want to hear more about that. Mm-hmm. And most recently, she was in the Peace Corps in Cameroon while working as a health volunteer. It was there that she met her husband, who now lives with her in South Florida, along with their 2-year-old son. And currently, Madison is the co-founder of Popalicious Popcorn, a small popcorn business in Pompano Beach. And she also provides e-commerce marketing for a beauty ingredient supplier. You have your hands in so many different things.
Yes, very multi-passionate.
Exactly. And recently, she graduated with her Ayurvedic Health Counselor certification and is planning on moving back to Cameroon with her family within the next few years. So you just have so many different passions, and you're able to execute them on so many different levels. So I'm excited to hear, like, all about it.
Yeah.
So I'd love for you to just give a little bit more background. What first sparked you to be interested in travel? Was it something that you grew up with? Is it something that you came across later in life? And how you've been able to merge your passions of sustainability and health education with your passion for traveling?
Yeah. So my passion for traveling really started with my mom. From an early age, she was traveling with us. She would bring us on her business trips. We would do summer vacation, 2-week-long road trips around the U.S. And then as we got a little bit older, she started taking us out of the United States. We would visit Europe. We would visit South America. We visited Asia. But I would say my love for travel really started with my trip to the Dominican Republic. It was a trip that I didn't want to go on. I had just broken up with my boyfriend. I was 17 at the time. And I just wanted to, like, hang out at home. And my mom was like, no, you need to go and broaden your horizons. Go do something. So she kind of forced me to go on the Dominican Republic trip. But it was the trip that really, like, ingrained my love for travel.
And so was this trip like a spring break trip? What came about? How did you get involved with the DR?
Yeah, so it was a 10-day summer trip. It was a program actually with Global Leadership Adventures, but we were working with a nonprofit organization called Seven Elements in the Dominican Republic. I had no idea that it was going to be a sustainability trip. I really just kind of went in blind. It was my mom who, like, read all the paperwork. I just got on the plane and went. And it was my first time really kind of traveling by myself. I didn't know anybody who was in the group. Like I said, I had no idea what we were going to be doing. But I went, I met some lifelong friends there. That's when I first learned about sustainability and kind of got into that. It's also where I think I developed my love for health as well. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of where those two passions really merged.
And what about sharing resources and health resources and working in that sustainability work? What about that sparked so much passion and fire within you?
Yeah, so I think it was the community aspect of it. I love working with people one-on-one, getting to talk to them. And I've always kind of had this passion for health as well. And so working in the Dominican Republic, I was doing health surveys and just getting to know the village that I was working with and building those relationships, building that community. And I just loved it so much.
Yeah, it's like you really got to be a part of their community.
Exactly.
And being able to see the direct impact of something so simple as clean water or hygiene or sex education or all the things that you were able to be able to impart for these people and change their lives on a one-to-one basis is so powerful.
Yeah.
And so then that kind of led you on a path of following different programs or looking for different ways to be able to give back in that perspective. So you studied abroad in Spain, right?
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, definitely. So I actually, before that, I went back to the Dominican Republic with my program advisor with college.
Okay.
And I was working with doctors there, working with little kids, doing health education there as well. And so I really kind of fell in love with the DR, and I wanted to study abroad there again, but they didn't have another program for me. So I decided to stick with Spanish speaking because I was fluent in Spanish. And so I went to Seville. I was majoring in public health and Spanish at the time. So when I went to Seville, a lot of my coursework was in health, and it was all in Spanish, which was kind of crazy for me because I didn't know a lot of the technical language.
And it's kind of like different vernacular and different, the way that they speak is differently.
Yeah, it was very different. So it took a little bit of getting used to. But while I was in Seville, I lived with a host family. I love my host mom. I still keep in touch with her to this day. But part of that study abroad experience was also to do a summer internship. And that's where I interned with the Red Cross, and I started doing health education for teens in Spain, mainly focused around sex education and drugs.
Wow. And it really seems like these experiences that you've had working in the DR closely with the community, working in Seville closely with the community, and later down the track doing mosquito prevention programs in the Amazon, it feels like your travel experiences are very different to a lot of the travel experiences that a lot of people have growing up, whether it's going to resorts or going to the fancy hotels, which I'm sure you were able to experience with your mom on business trips. But really inserting yourself in rural or remote or a little bit of like destitute communities and cementing yourselves in those. Those are not experiences that a lot of people are seeking.
Yeah.
And you were able to do that. I think that says a lot about you and your character and wanting to travel and really impact while you travel. And so you were doing your master's in, what were you doing your master's in actually?
So I was getting my master's in global health.
Okay, great. And so while you're doing your master's in global health, you're there at Notre Dame. And was it part of the program that led you to do a mosquito prevention program?
Yeah, so part of the program was we had to do our capstone project, which was like our thesis in a different country because it was global health.
Okay.
And since I was fluent in Spanish, I wanted to go to a Spanish-speaking country. And my advisor pitched a project about a mosquito prevention program in Iquitos, Peru, which is in the Amazon jungle.
Okay.
So I kind of grabbed a hold of that and really went at it full force. I kind of discovered a love for entomology and bugs, which was kind of weird, not something that I expected.
That's so funny.
I know, like, people think it's so weird that I can look at a mosquito now and tell you exactly what kind of mosquito it is.
Wow. Well, that's weird. Handy, especially right? Florida.
But yeah, so I went with that project. A lot of it was actually based in the United States doing research on mosquitoes in the lab at Notre Dame. Then I went and did 3 months in the jungle kind of implementing this mosquito repellent technology and working with the communities there. My project was a bit more social based. Okay. So while I was helping develop the technology, I was also on the ground doing surveys with people, seeing how they liked it, seeing what we could improve. So that was really interesting as well.
Yeah, you get that one-on-one aspect again as you get to be able to implement the research and the education and then going back into the community. What was that like spending 3 months on just like a day-to-day basis, like your daily life, 3 months in the Amazon?
It was, I loved it, honestly. It was, I was working with the Naval Medical Unit in Peru. And so I was working a lot with nurses, doctors, researchers. One of the women who worked there was also a Peace Corps volunteer. So I kind of got to talk to her about her experience.
Oh.
But yeah, it was, I was working a lot, honestly. I didn't have a lot of time to do a lot of like touristy things. But honestly, that was my favorite part because I felt like I got to build, like I said, I love building relationships with people. So I got to build relationships with the people that I was working with, along with the community that I was working in, because I was I was interviewing them and like serving them probably once every 3 weeks, just going in, checking in on them, seeing how everything was working. And so I got to really know the community that I was working in as well.
Yeah, incredible. Mm-hmm. And where you were staying, what was like the accommodation like? Were you at a hotel? Were you in an apartment? Mm-hmm. Like, what was that like for listeners being like, I wonder what that's like to go do a volunteer program or go do some sort of like research program?
Yeah, so Notre Dame set me up in an apartment. It was one of the nicer apartments in the area, mm-hmm. for sure. But it was right on the Amazon River. Like in the morning, I could go out on my balcony and see it, which was beautiful. Wow. And I was in more of a touristy area of town. So I got to meet a lot of expats and people traveling there to do ayahuasca, which is a big part of Amazonian culture, especially in Peru. So that was pretty cool. I got to meet people from all over the world.
Yeah, I'm sure. It's like a part of their tourism now
is
people going in.
Yeah.
That's a whole nother topic. Yeah, yeah. And so you met someone who had been in the Peace Corps. Mm-hmm. Was that your first foray into thinking, I want to join the Peace Corps? Were you already interested? And then her experience kind of cemented that you wanted to do it?
Yeah. So I had heard of the Peace Corps before when I was working in the Dominican Republic. We helped a Peace Corps volunteer with his project building stoves for the community that he was working in. So that was kind of my first introduction to the Peace Corps. And then I decided I would like, I kind of wanted to do it, wasn't really sure yet. But then it's like the universe just kept throwing it at me. And so when I met the woman in my program who was in the Peace Corps and she told me about her experience, I was like, okay, like I have to do this. So
that's amazing. So you decide I'm going to do the Peace Corps. Mm-hmm. What's that process for someone listening who thinks that's really cool and they're maybe interested in it as well? What's the application process like? What's the onboarding process like?
Yeah, so the application process is really easy. You fill out your application online on the Peace Corps website, and you usually hear back within about a week with an interview. Throughout the application process, you can choose. They give you like your three top choices of what type of work you want to do, and then what countries. I'm not really sure if they really listened to it because I did not get any of my top three choices.
But it worked out for you.
It did work out for me. But yeah, so you apply, and then about a week later, you will get an interview. They give you the questions for the interview ahead of time so you can prepare. And then I've heard of some people getting offered a spot right after the interview. But for me, it took about a week to hear back if they were going to accept me into the program or not. I had originally applied for a position, a health volunteer position in Peru, because I thought, you know, that's where I had been working. I knew the culture. I spoke Spanish. And they came back to me and said, nope, we want you to go to Cameroon. And I didn't know where Cameroon was.
I was going to say.
I knew nothing about it. I didn't know it was in Africa, even. I thought it was like some little island somewhere. So I had to do my research. And when they tell you where they want you to go, you have a very short window to decide if you want to take it. It's like 24 to 48 hours or something. So you have to like tell them your decision really quickly.
Wow, I didn't know it was that fast.
Yeah, it's very, very fast. So yeah, they invited me to go to Cameroon. I had no idea where it was. Did some research. I was like, I don't know about this. They speak French. I don't speak French. I've never particularly wanted to like live in Africa before, but I figured the Peace Corps was something that I wanted to do for a while. And if this was the way that it was going to present itself to me, I was just going to do it. So I didn't even wait the full 24 hours. I don't even think I talked to my parents about it before I accepted. I just sent the email, said I wanted to do it, and we went from there.
Wow. So, and so when you decided, okay, I'm going to go to Cameroon, I'm going to do this Peace Corps thing, how long was it? You're supposed to be there for 2 years or 3 years?
2 years and 3 months.
Okay. Mm-hmm. This episode is brought to you by Child & Company. Child & Company is South Florida's first family-friendly office space featuring private offices, a professional content creation studio, and childcare for hybrid work and work-from-home parents located in Boca Raton. Child & Company is founded on the belief that you shouldn't have to choose between raising a family and being career-driven. Their core mission is to create an environment where family and work can exist in harmony. The best part to me as a mom is that you can pop in and breastfeed your baby or have lunch with your toddler if you like, and then pop back into your office for your Zoom meeting. which I think is so key, especially for newborn moms going back to work. It's the perfect transition from emerging out of the newborn bubble and getting back to the business you love. Child & Company provides you the flexibility to work in a beautifully designed, ergonomic private office with insanely good Wi-Fi connection and soundproofing while just being steps away from your child. They have monthly themes that they base their lessons on, like exploring the animals of the Amazon, which I obviously love when children get opportunities to learn more about the world and build a sense of curiosity. Child & Company offers weekly and monthly classes and events like Zumbini, music class for babies, mindful cooking for toddlers, big kid yoga, and mindful mama community events, and so much more. I've been a member since February 2023, utilizing their private offices and their professional content creation studio. Child & Company is where all of the magic happens for this podcast. Their beautiful recording studio is soundproofed with state-of-the-art equipment, microphones, lighting, and cameras, so you can record your podcast, course content, meditation clips, and anything else you might want to record for your business. The Child & Company team truly feels like family. They are an extension of my team over here at Rising Nature Retreats and the Transform with Travel podcast, as well as an extension of my own family. If you're local to Palm Beach and Broward County, do yourself a favor and check out Child & Company. Visit www.childandcompany.com or head over to Instagram at Child & Company. And so what was that like for you to go to your parents and say, okay, I've accepted this position, this is where I'm going? What was that conversation like for you?
So my parents had known for a while that I was thinking about doing the Peace Corps, so it didn't come completely as a surprise for them. But when they heard that I was going to Cameroon, they were a little bit nervous. My dad didn't know where Cameroon was either, so he had to do some research. But my mom was like, you know, are you sure? Is it safe? Because, you know, in the news, we hear a lot about how unsafe African countries can be. Mm-hmm. So my mom was a little bit more cautious, whereas my dad did some research. And I mean, you know, my dad, he's always super happy. And so he was like, go for it. Go chase your dreams. So,
but your mom has seen so much of the world, right? So she is so aware of the things that can go wrong and, you know, the areas of the world that to be cautious of. So it makes sense.
Right. Yeah. And my mom had traveled to Africa before. She worked in Uganda for a little bit. And so she kind of knew a little bit more about African culture than I did. Mm. So I think that's also a little bit why she was cautious. But ultimately, she was like, you know what, it's your life. If this is what you want to do, then you do it. Just be careful.
And so you land in Cameroon, you pack up all your stuff.
Yeah.
You land in Cameroon. I know they do, you do like a couple days, like, or maybe it's a couple weeks, you can tell me. But the orientation, right? You're doing a little bit of orientation and then you go to the village that you're working with. Can you tell a little bit about that process?
Yeah. So actually, you go to Washington, D.C. or Philadelphia first, and that's where you meet like your cohort, the people that you're going to be traveling with and who kind of become like your buddies while you're in the country that you're serving in. And you do a brief 2 to 3 day orientation there where they just kind of tell you about the culture, what to expect. And then you all get on a plane together and you go to your country. For me, like I said, it was Cameroon. So we got to Cameroon. They put us in a hotel in the capital city. And we stayed in the capital city again for another 3 days where we had another orientation, kind of getting used to the time difference and getting over jet lag, which was pretty nice. We also had to get like a lot of our legal documents, like our residence cards and things like that. And then after those 3 days, they take you to go live with your host family, who you're going to be living with for 3 months while you're being trained. And like I said, when I went to Cameroon, I didn't know any Spanish, or French. So moving in with my host family was an experience because they were trying to talk to me. I didn't understand them. I was trying to talk to them. They couldn't understand me. But I mean, we lived with them for 3 months, so I did learn the language. And during the training for Peace Corps, you are intensively trained in language. Like, I would say language training comprises like 4 to 5 hours of every day of training.
Wow.
And you're in training for about 8 to 9 hours a day. So it's those first 3 months are really, really, really intense. but they really set you up for when you move to your village, because once you move to your village, you're really on your own. Mm. So,
and that's so, like, I would never think Peace Corps and language immersion, but that would make so much mm-hmm. sense. And how cool that you did get forced to go to another country yeah. where you now you're trilingual. Like, you, exactly, you know, yeah. that's amazing.
Yeah. So, yeah, the language learning was a really big part of the training, and it set me up for success. So
you spent a couple months with your host family mm-hmm. getting trained, doing your language immersion, and then mm-hmm. you say you get sent to another village to do work on your own. Or were you in a team? What did that look like?
Yeah, so throughout training, you're kind of being set up for where you're going to serve later on in your village, where you're going to live. 6 weeks into training, you get to do a site visit, where you go and you visit a volunteer who has already been working at their site, their village, for about a year. Mm. And they say that that kind of gives you an indication of where you will be serving. That did not apply for me. I served in a completely different region. But the site visit was very eye-opening, because up until that point with Peace Corps, it had kind of been a little bit more luxurious than what it was going to be like at site. Like, we were traveling in coach buses. Even just to get to our site visit, they put us on a train with the sleeper cars, which was really nice because we had our own beds and everything. But once we got to the village where we were visiting for our site visit, it was a completely different ball game. Like, wow. I remember getting off the train and the girl who I was visiting was like, okay, we're all going to get in this car. And there were like 12 of us, and they just slammed us all with our luggage into this tiny little car that was like supposed to seat only 5 people.
Oh my gosh.
And it was so
dusty. One of you
dusty.
On the roof, just like holding
right?
on.
I know, seriously. But yeah, so they had the windows rolled up on the car because it was so dusty. They didn't want the dust coming in. So I was like, dripping sweat on this hour-long car ride on this dirt road.
I'm like claustrophobic just hearing this.
Yeah. And then we got to site. We got to see where she lived. She lived in this really, really tiny little house. We got to meet the people that she lived in the community with. We got to go with her on some of the projects that she was working on, which was really eye-opening and really mm-hmm. interesting. And then we went back to our host families. And around the 10-week mark is when you find out where you're going to be actually serving, like, your site. And it was kind of fun. We did it like the Harry Potter sorting. Like, we made this little sorting hat
that so
everybody got to wear. And then we announced where everybody was going. And my site was called Bangaran in the west region of Cameroon. And Peace Corps, once you go to your site, you're really on your own. Like, Peace Corps kind of like brushes their hands of you almost. And I remember trying to get to my site. I had no idea how to get there. And I had to kind of figure that out on my own. Luckily, I didn't have a very far way to go.
And you're by yourself. Like, you don't have another team member with you?
No, some volunteers did have, we call them site mates, mm-hmm. people who served in the same site as them. But I did not. I later asked my program manager about, like, why. And she was like, well, we just saw you were so resilient. You could figure it out on your own. I was like, I don't know if that's a compliment.
Thanks, but thank also you. I want a friend.
Right? Yeah.
That's so crazy. Mm-hmm. So you get to your site. You realize, like, your reality of your situation. Mm-hmm. And so what kind of projects were you working on?
Yeah, so I was assigned to be a health volunteer, and when you get to your site, you have a counterpart, and this person is supposed to kind of help you get integrated in the community, but also integrated into your work. So
this is like a local Cameroonian.
Okay. Exactly, yeah. Okay. So my counterpart worked heavily in vaccination programs with the
amazing.
Hospital. Mm-hmm. So a lot of my work in Bangaran focused on vaccination, but since I also had a background with mosquito-borne diseases, I expressed that interest, and so I was able to develop some projects around there. My counterpart and I implemented a health club at 3 different high schools, which was really, really fun. We would do weekly meetings and just go over different health topics. I also started this program with A2 Empowerment. It's an NGO that's based in Cameroon. But basically what it does is it's like specifically for girls. You find girls in high school who are doing really well in high school, but their parents can't afford to keep sending them to school. And so it's a scholarship program. You pay for their tuition, but then they also join this program where they learn about leadership, health, things like that. So wow. I was doing a little bit of that as well.
Wow. I mean, I just, it's like I've known you my whole life, and just to hear the amount of impact that you've had on this community. Mm-hmm. And so did it take a little bit of time to feel like, okay, I'm respected in this community, or I'm valued, or I just feel like I quasi belong? Like, I know you never feel like you fully belong right. when you're an expat, especially coming from such different cultures. But how long was that process of assimilation, if you ever did feel like you assimilated?
Yeah. So in Bangarang, I would say it took me about 8 months to feel like I was respected as like a community member. Mm. Yeah, it was a long road getting there, because for a really long time, people just looked at me as the American and expected things from me just from like what they saw on TV and what they heard about, you know, Americans. So it took a long time to kind of establish boundaries, establish expectations. But once I got to know people and I went out in the community and just really like ingrained myself there, people started developing more respect for me and treating me as an equal. Mm. So,
and was there any points where you hit a low and you were like, I just want to go home, or the homesickness, or just like the level of quality of what you're expecting in terms of just like basic needs being met? Like, what was that like for you?
Definitely. I would say it hit me almost right away once I got to Bangarang and I saw my house, and I was like, whoa, like this is real. I didn't have a toilet. I didn't have anywhere to cook food. The electricity was out when I got there, and it stayed out for 3 months.
Oh my gosh. So what do you
do? It was a huge wake up call. Luckily, I had packed a lot of like solar panels to charge my phone and things like that.
But like, I don't have anywhere to cook, but at least I can charge my phone.
Yeah. I know. Yeah. Luckily, my counterpart, he had an extra stove and gas tank at his house. And so I just paid him for it. I was like, wow. Please give it to me.
Wow.
But yeah, that first month that I was at my site, I was very homesick. It was also December, and so I knew it was like holiday season back home, and I wasn't going to be home for Christmas, and I had really bad service in my village, so I couldn't even really talk to my family that much, and I didn't know anybody in my village yet. And I will say my counterpart did a lot to make me feel included. Like, he would invite me out to the bar with his friends. He would ask me to hang out with him and his friends anytime they were doing something. Mm. But that first month at my village was really, really hard, and I was homesick. And for Christmas, I ended up going to visit one of my friends because I was like, I can't be here by myself.
Yeah, that's tough. And what kind of mindset helped you overcome that homesickness and overcome just that barrier of, this is so different to anything I'm used to? The way that you're living, the isolation in some aspects, it really takes a level of resilience, mm-hmm. like your Peace Corps manager said that you had. What kind of mindset helped you push past that?
Honestly, it was the mindset of, I've kind of done this before. Going into it, I knew it was going to be a little bit hard. And they tell you throughout training that the first 3 months at site are really, really hard. And I knew that, you know, there was going to be a light at the end of the tunnel. So I was like, you know what? I just have to power through this. I just have to keep pushing along, keep learning the language, keep putting myself out there, meeting new people. And eventually I'm going to make friends. Mm-hmm. Eventually people are going to look at me and know who I am. Eventually I'm going to start feeling comfortable. I will say though too, that kind of making my house my own also helped a lot. Like, putting my own decorations up, doing just like some personal shopping for things that I knew were going to make me feel at home really helped me feel more comfortable in the house that I was living in.
Yeah, so, that's a really good tip for anyone staying long term somewhere, mm-hmm. is make it your own. And so you did eventually make friends, and you made one friend in particular, yes. that changed your life. Can you talk a little bit about your experience of meeting your now husband?
Yeah, so it was actually really funny. My husband didn't live in the village that I was working in. I was actually traveling to the capital city to pick my mom up from the airport, and I had to take this 8-hour long bus ride. And my husband, my now husband, was in line behind me at the ticket counter for this bus trip. And I remember thinking, oh my God, this man better not talk to me. Like, I don't want to talk to this person, because that's kind of what men do in Cameroon, is like they like set their eyes on a target and they will not, they're persistent. Yeah, they won't leave you alone. And I was like, I just want to sleep on this bus ride. I'm tired. I don't want anyone to talk to me. But my husband was in line behind me. He told the ticket lady to put our seats next to each other. And I kept looking at her. I was like, don't do it. Don't do it. But he was like, no, please do it. And she ended up doing it. And then I was like so annoyed and frustrated that I just left the ticket counter. I didn't even get my change back. So my husband brought my change back for me and we started talking. He ended up buying me a soda and an egg sandwich, which I thought was kind of nice.
Very romantic.
Right, yeah.
I mean, first of all, that would just never fly in the U.S. Like a woman saying like, please don't sit me next to this man. And then the person's like, well, here we go. Like, this is so crazy. So he buys you the egg sandwich and then.
And then we just start talking and he starts telling me about his job, his family. I was being pretty conservative with the information that I was giving him about myself.
Absolutely.
But he was like an open book, which surprised me. He told me about like his whole life in that 30-minute time frame that we were waiting to get on the bus. And then it was time to get on the bus and we got on and we sat down and he asked me, can I hold your hand? And I was like thinking about it and I was like, if I say no, is he going to be persistent? So I was like, fine, whatever. Yeah, you can hold my hand. So we ended up holding hands the entire bus ride. He was like showing me music that he was listening to and we were sharing earbuds. They
headphones?
Were in AirPods, headphones.
We forgot what headphones are.
Yeah, and then at every stop along the way, he would buy me a snack, which I thought was really cute. Mm. And we just talked the entire bus ride, 8 hours. And he was asking me things that I like to do, and I was telling him that I really love swimming, and I hadn't found a place to go swimming yet. And so when we finally got to the capital city, he was like, I'm taking you to a pool. I know where a pool is. So he took me to this pool. We ended up spending the entire afternoon like swimming and just like relaxing. And I felt so comfortable with him. And it was so weird because we had literally just met that morning. Mm-hmm. But I just felt so comfortable with him. And so when he took me home at the end of the day, I was like, I want to stay in touch with this person. So I sent him a text and I was like, we need to meet up tomorrow again. Let's like go and do something. So we ended up going back to the pool the next day. He took me to go get some fried fish, like street food in Cameroon, which is really good. And then that afternoon we had to go pick my mom up from the airport. And I wanted him to go with me because I had never been to the airport by myself. So he went with me and my mom met him.
Oh my gosh. I can just imagine your mom's face right now.
I know. She was like, who is this? And I was like, oh, it's just a friend I met yesterday. And she was like, okay, you know, guess we'll get in a car with him.
Right.
So he took us back to the hotel that we were staying at. And my mom told me that night, this is the man that you're going to marry.
Which was
pretty amazing that she like had that foresight. Because, I mean, at that point, we were just friends that we had just met, literally. Yeah, and so while my mom was in Cameroon, he kind of showed us around everywhere. So my mom got to know him as well, and she, like, loved him.
Wow.
And I remember hearing her talk to my sister-in-law about him, and she was like, I hope that, like, we can find a way to get him to the United States and all this stuff. And I thought that was crazy because I had only known him for such a short time. But yeah, now he lives here and we're married.
Yeah. Wow. You know what? I've known you for so long and I've known your husband for so long and mm-hmm. I've never heard that full story before. Yeah. So it's so amazing just how the universe just puts, it's like that was supposed to happen. Mm-hmm. You're supposed to be together. And sometimes I find, because Sam and I have similar-ish stories, mm-hmm. sometimes when you go through challenging times together, it's important to remember how many stars had to align that you met in the first place. That you're like, no, we have to move through this because we're supposed to be together.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really powerful. So you're in Cameroon and the pandemic hits. What happens? You were supposed to still be in Cameroon for a little while longer, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I was still supposed to be in Cameroon, but they ended up evacuating us. And that was kind of a jarring experience,
yes.
I would say.
Yes.
We had to leave immediately. They gave us 24 hours notice. They were like, pack up your things and get out. Wow. And they put us on planes. We had to go to Ethiopia first and then flew back to the United States.
G'day, mates from the land down under. Just kidding. I'm right here in South Florida enjoying a true blue Aussie coffee, pastry, and meat pie at my absolute favorite cafe here in South Florida, Bite and Coffee. That's B-Y-T-E and Coffee, located in Lighthouse Point. Bite and Coffee is owned and managed by the absolute best couple from down under, Dan and Kat, who moved to South Florida from Melbourne, Australia with the dream of bringing the incredible Aussie cafe culture to the States. As someone who's lived in Australia for 5 years, I surely do miss my Aussie flat white coffee, brekkie buns, and sausage rolls. But what I miss more is the sense of community when you step inside your favorite cafe. You know that feeling when you walk in and they already know your order and it's ready to go? Yeah, that kind of feeling. Bite and Coffee brings the good vibes, delicious food and coffee, and the true sense of family. I can bring my little girls for breakfast and know that they are welcomed. If you're living in South Florida or just visiting and passing by, I highly recommend heading over to Bite and Coffee and grabbing a coffee with your breakfast or lunch, or even checking out their incredible wine and beer selection with a delicious charcuterie board at night. It's the perfect spot for a catch up with a friend or a business meeting. As a special gift to listeners, when you order at Bite, be sure to mention Transform with Travel for 10% off your order. So go ahead and check it out. Bite and Coffee, located in Lighthouse Point. And so you had to say goodbye to your partner at the time.
Mm-hmm. It happened so fast. Like, I didn't even really have time to say goodbye to people in my village because I had a 16-hour trip ahead of me. I had to get to the capital.
Yeah.
So I said like very brief goodbyes to everybody, which was really sad. And then I didn't even really get to see my husband before I left. So because he was working in a different city at the time. So we left we had applied for the fiance visa. So we knew he was eventually coming to the United States.
So you're already in the process of getting him over. Okay.
Yeah.
And so you come back home after living in Cameroon in your little house, in your little village.
Mm-hmm.
What was that like for you coming home? And oftentimes I talk to people about culture shock and people are like, you know, it actually wasn't the culture shock of being in the other country. It was the culture shock coming back home.
Mm-hmm.
And so can you explain a little bit about your experience of coming back home and just reacclimating to American culture?
Yeah. So coming back home was a really difficult process for me. I wasn't used to having so many luxuries, number one, and it almost kind of made me angry how much people took advantage of those things and just had like, I noticed that a lot of people didn't respect the things that they had, which was really, really frustrating for me because I had lived with so much less for almost 3 years.
Yeah.
But also it was difficult because in Cameroon, there's a huge community aspect. People would come by your house all hours of the day. For me, I was always with somebody when I was in Cameroon. I was very rarely in my house by myself unless I was sleeping. So coming home and not having that community aspect, all of my friends that I had when I came home had moved away. So I didn't really have friends living in South Florida anymore. But even just like American culture, you know, you don't really pop into someone's house without letting them know first or them inviting you. And so getting used to that was a little bit difficult as well. Making new friends was hard when I came back because, you know, there's just not as many places where you can meet people and people aren't as open as they were in Cameroon. So that was also pretty hard as well.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I can imagine I've told the story on the podcast before, but it was only 5 weeks, so it's not nearly as long as you, but I had to go back home early from our time in India and go home really quickly because my grandma had passed away. And I literally went from being in Bangladesh, walking around the street markets there and just seeing the complete poverty, to then almost 24 hours later being at the yacht club having dinner in my hometown with the white tablecloths and just being like, how can these two worlds exist right now?
Mm-hmm.
This is just my mind. I didn't feel like I was actually there. Mm-hmm. And it was just so mind-blowing to me. Like you said, the level of privilege versus poverty and how the two can exist at the same time. And so I definitely think that's something that shaped me as a person, is being able to take those experiences. How do you think your experience of living in Cameroon and then also reacclimating and raising a family here in the U.S., how do you think that shaped you as a person?
I'm definitely a lot less materialistic, which is kind of funny because my husband, who is Cameroonian, is very materialistic, as I'm sure you
shoes.
Know. Loves his shoes, loves his Gucci and Versace. I am not that way. And I think living in Cameroon for such a long period of time kind of shaped that. And raising my son, I've been trying to teach him not to be materialistic, not to be too attached to like toys and things like that. I try to get my son out in nature as often as possible, but I also try to teach him to be resourceful. Like, I remember in Cameroon, the kids would find really anything on the ground to play with, and they would turn it into a toy. Like, they would take little rocks and take little sticks and push them along the ground, pretending that they were cars. And so last weekend, I showed that to my son, and he loved it. We played that way for like an hour, which I thought was so cute. So I just try to, you know, not take for granted the things that we have, but I also want to teach my son that, you know, you don't need as much as the world seems to throw in your face. You can live with a lot less and still be very, very happy.
Yeah, and oftentimes living with that less actually does, I think, like scientifically proven through different bouts of research, that living with less actually does make you happy to a certain extent. There's like a threshold of income to make, and then anything above that actually diminishes happiness over time. Mm-hmm. So I agree with that. I remember one time we were at the beach in Greece, and I was watching this family of like three or four kids walk to the beach with just like a backpack. And I was like, where's the wagon of toys?
Right?
Where's the cooler of snacks? These kids just ran around with like a beach ball and some rocks and like had the best time. And it's something that I definitely took home with me. Like, they don't need all the things. They could have fun with a bucket and a shovel and that's it. They could have fun. My daughter has fun just picking up big leaves on the ground and like pretending they're swords. Like there's this imaginative play that's really cool. And so you mentioned your son, you have a 2-year-old. He's so, so cute.
Thank you.
How do you think, how important is it for you for him to understand or know or appreciate his Cameroonian culture? And how do you weave that into your daily life with him?
It is extremely important to us that he maintains contact with his Cameroonian culture and stays in touch with that. So, I mean, luckily my husband is, I mean, he's very ingrained in his culture. And so he's been teaching my son the local language, like his local tribal language. But my husband has also traveled back and forth to Cameroon a few times. And every time he comes back with something new to teach my son about. So that's been pretty cool. We also FaceTime my husband's family quite often. So he gets that language immersion as well through that, and gets to see what the community is like over there as well. So it's definitely important. I think once we move back to Cameroon, he's really gonna see like how all of these things come into play. But it's been a fun experience kind of introducing him to this other culture that he hasn't really seen so much of yet.
And soccer. Is he going to be a soccer star?
I hope so. He loves soccer.
I could see him being he so good at that.
He loves it. Every Sunday, we go to the park and we play soccer, and he just loves it.
Oh, that's amazing. And so the very last thing I'd love to touch on is, on top of all of these passions of yours, traveling and culture, language, sustainable work, health education, you also run a popcorn business.
Yes.
And so can you explain a little bit about what the business is, how it came about, and what that's been like for you to now run a small business in America?
Yeah, sure. So when my mom was visiting me in Cameroon, she started talking about opening a popcorn business. And I didn't really think very much of it. I was like, oh, this is just another one of my mom's crazy ideas. But when I got back from Cameroon, she had started this like full-fledged popcorn business, and it was going to be on Good Morning America. And I remember getting off the plane from Cameroon, and my mom was like, I need you to help me tomorrow. And so I kind of jumped in, helped her get through her Good Morning America venture. And then I realized that I just like, I loved it so much and that I wanted to help her build this business. So I joined her on this journey, and we've been on Good Morning America a second time. We've been on Fox and Friends. We've been on QVC. And in March, we opened our first retail store, which was really, really exciting. My mom and I got to design it from the inside out and pick our offerings that we were going to offer. And it's been really, really fun.
Yeah. And so for those who don't know your mom, Maria Bailey, she's one of the top marketers in the country, if not mm-hmm. in the world. And if she says she's going to start a business, you better believe it's going right. to be on Good Morning yeah. America and be a national sensation. So the name of the business is Popalicious, correct?
Yes.
Yes. And so you also do e-commerce, so people can go online and also order popcorn mm-hmm. cakes and different types of offerings online as well.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. And Amazing. We ship all over the U.S.
Amazing. So, mm-hmm. so I always end these episodes with rapid fire questions Ooh, about okay. travel. So number one is, if you could only go back to one country or place in the world, where would it be and why?
The Dominican Republic. I developed such an attachment to the community that I was working with there, and I want to go back and see them again and see where they all are in their lives now. So,
where in the DR were you?
I was based in this little town called Cabarete.
Okay.
It's a little surf town, but the village that I was doing most of my work in was called Caño Dulce.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Is that near, like if I'm looking at the island, is it on the east side, the west side?
Oh gosh, it's on the north side.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Mm-hmm. And so number two is, what's next on your bucket list?
Oh my gosh, I just turned 30, so I just made my 40 under 40 bucket list.
Oh, great idea. I need to do that.
Yeah. And actually, what's on my bucket list is to go on one of your retreats.
Oh, I would love yeah. that. You are welcome anytime.
Thank you.
And so number three is, what's your biggest life lesson that you've learned while traveling?
Oh, biggest life lesson is definitely to just go with the flow. Just whatever travel is handing you, just go with it. Because it's ultimately going to serve you. And it might be a little bit stressful in the moment, but it's going to help you grow. You're going to overcome it. And it's going to make your travel experience so much better.
Yeah, absolutely. I like you saying yes to Cameroon. Yeah. And you didn't even really know where it was. Yep. And you met your husband and your mm-hmm. whole life has changed. You never yeah. know what's waiting for you.
Yeah.
And then the very last question is, if you could give one piece of advice to an aspiring explorer, someone mm-hmm. who wants to get out in the world and see the world, what would you say to them?
I would say pick somewhere on the map, and even if it's out of your comfort zone, just go. Mm-hmm. Just go and see what it has to offer you. That would be my advice.
Just do it like Mary-Kate and Ashley style and exactly. throw a dart at the map. And
yeah, yeah. Just pick somewhere, like spin your little globe yeah. around and like blindly pick a spot and just go. Just yeah. go and see what it has to offer you.
I love that.
Mm-hmm.
So how can people connect with you online or through your business? What's the best way for mm-hmm. people to say, I want to connect with Madison? What's the best way for that?
Yeah, so you can connect with me on Instagram. My Instagram handle is Madison Mangame. If you're looking to connect to me through Popalicious, Instagram again, it's at Popalicious Popcorn. Yeah, those are the two best ways to connect with me.
Amazing. Thank mm-hmm. you so much. Yeah,
thank you so much. I'm so happy I got to be here.
Yay. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Transform with Travel podcast. Don't forget to hit subscribe so you never miss an episode of inspiration, adventure, and exploration. If you felt inspired by this episode, please rate and review in whatever streaming app you're listening from. This allows us to spread the word even more and continue to serve up weekly doses of adventure. As always, we'd love if you could share the episode with someone in your life who you think will benefit from this conversation. Thanks so much for listening. This is your reminder to get out there and keep on exploring.